You are listening to WRFG Atlanta, 89.3 FM. Up next, Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. Hold on tight. And thank you so much for listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. Welcome to Alternative Perspectives. This is Atlanta's only local radio hour devoted exclusively to issues affecting Atlanta's queer community. I, of course, am your host, Greg Bossen. Thank you so much for listening. And as usual, the opinions expressed here, although they are always correct, are only those of myself and my guests and do not necessarily represent the views of WRFG, its employees, board, volunteers, funders, or listeners. Tonight's show is on LGBTQ asylum seekers, and we've talked about this in the past. Especially these days, there are many that are many LGBTQ members of our community across the globe that are seeking asylum from countries where they are being treated extremely poorly. And traditionally, they've been able to make it into the United States that way. But in June of this year, the Trump administration released regulations for asylum seekers that have the effect of making it much more difficult for members of our community abroad to be granted asylum in this country. Just to give you an example, one change is the elimination of gender-based asylum. Basically means you cannot seek asylum based on being persecuted because of your gender any longer. Now, this not only removes the ability for women being persecuted in countries like Afghanistan to gain asylum, but may also prevent asylum claims for trans individuals who are currently under physical assault in many countries. Additionally, LGBTQ advocacy and speech are no longer considered a political opinion for purposes of asking for asylum. So to talk about this, as well as the work they are doing, we have a guest tonight who is actually with an organization called the Rainbow Railroad, which I think is a really cool name of an organization. It's a Canadian-based organization, began in 2006, whose purpose is to help LGBTQ individuals who are seeking asylum from their own countries. And Eric Wright, who works with the Rainbow Railroad, is going to be on with us for a few minutes tonight. But before we do that,
news of the queer.
I know that's right.
Oh, no, she didn't say what?
Never gets old, does it? All right, so we'll start here in Atlanta with ARCA, or the AIDS Research Consortium of Atlanta, that is closing this month after three decades as one of the most respected HIV/AIDS research facilities in the country. ARCA enrolled thousands of residents in some 300 clinical HIV drug trials since it opened in 1988. The effort contributed to the licensing of 25 HIV/AIDS drug treatments by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. Melanie Thompson is the founder and executive director, and according to her, COVID probably contributed to the timing of our closing, but I think the changing landscape of HIV research has contributed the most to our closing. We are very proud that we were able to contribute to the FDA approval of almost all of the drugs that currently exist for HIV treatment and prevention, she added. ARCA was the first HIV clinical research center in Atlanta. It played a critical role in huge steps against AIDS, says Carlos Del Rio, co-director of the Emory Center for AIDS Research. Over the years, ARCA has contributed to some of the pivotal trials in HIV treatment and prevention and has, as a result, helped improve the lives of people living with HIV and those who are at risk of HIV in Atlanta. Melanie Thompson, who's the executive director, states that it was ARCA's role as to serve strictly as a research facility that led to its closure. Because as we know, we've got a lot of treatments now and people are living full lives with HIV. But she said ending HIV now means people getting into care and staying there to keep the virus suppressed. People with HIV also need housing, transportation, and mental health services amid challenges like structural racism, stigma, and discrimination. So there's still a need for help out there, but not the kind of help that ARCA, strictly a research facility for drugs, would be able to offer. So that's really the story of our epidemic in Atlanta, Melanie says. ARCA's model was right for the time, but I don't think our model is the best model right now for where we are in Atlanta in 2020. Thompson and ARCA are busy winding down the remaining studies before permanently closing the facility. The first priority is taking care of the patients, he said. The organization is donating office equipment and supplies to nonprofits and selling medical equipment at a discounted price. Interested groups should email ARCA for more information. And one of their pieces of medical equipment is actually not one, not two, but three freezers that are of ultra low temperature, which are perfect for storing vaccines like the coronavirus vaccine. So that's something that people should pay attention to. Elsewhere in Georgia, and this is somewhat sad, well, very sad, 3 days after returning to a Georgia prison on a parole violation in October of 2019, Ashley Diamond, who is trans, was violently awakened at 4:30 a.m. by a man sexually assaulting her, an attack that left her bloodied and injured. So this happened a little over a year ago. A week later, another man forced himself onto Diamond as her cell was unlocked for lunch. When Diamond reported the instances to officials at the Georgia Diagnostic and Classification Prison in Jackson, they responded by mocking her. A few months later, as the assaults and violence continued, a prison nurse groped and harassed Diamond. So again, Diamond is trans, but in a male prison. Those and more allegations of violent sexual assaults, retaliation from prison officials, and a lack of concern for her safety are outlined in a new federal lawsuit against the Georgia Department of Corrections that Diamond and her attorneys filed on November the 23rd. The 105-page document details more than a dozen assaults since she re-entered state prison in October of 2019, including allegations that prison staff took part in three of the incidents. The lawsuit also alleges that the state violated her constitutional rights and failed to protect her because she is transgender. Being a woman in a men's prison is a nightmare, Diamond said in a statement provided by her attorneys at the Southern Poverty Law Center. I've been stripped of my identity. I never feel safe. Never. I experience sexual harassment on a daily basis, and the fear of sexual assault is always a looming thought. I'm bringing this lawsuit to bring about change on behalf of a community that deserves the inherent dignity to simply exist. This has been a problem for a while in the prison system where trans women are being thrown into men's prison. I don't think you need to have it explained to you how difficult that would be. The violent abuse worsened Diamond's post-traumatic stress disorder and left her physically and emotionally harmed at a time when she was also suffering from her gender dysphoria going untreated. She attempted to castrate herself to stop the flow of testosterone in her body and later tried to commit suicide, according to the lawsuit. Diamond faces continued violence, sexual assaults, and harassment due to being housed in men's prisons, according to the lawsuit. After the assaults, Diamond was moved moved to Coastal State Prison near Savannah, another facility for men, where she faced more violence, made possible in part, the lawsuit alleged, when prison officials intentionally housed her in a cell with a door that doesn't lock. Wow. The violence Diamond faces is not new, nor is the response from prison officials. In 2015, she sued the state prison system after she was repeatedly raped, denied medical treatment, and otherwise abused. The prison system changed its hormone treatment policy for trans inmates in April of 2015, and Diamond was released in September of 2015, 2 months early. The state settled the lawsuit in 2016 and paid Diamond $250,000. So these people need to get their act together. This is getting ridiculous. And now this is good. We'll end on a good note here. Over 66,000 people have signed an electronic petition in support of a 17-year-old gay student suspended from school for wearing nail polish. That's right, nail polish. Trevor Wilkinson attends Clyde High School near Abilene in Texas. He says when he returned from Thanksgiving last Monday, he was called aside by his teacher and was given an in-school suspension and told his nail polish violated the school's dress code for male students. The school handbook states boys cannot wear makeup or nail polish. However, Wilkinson and many others say this is discriminatory and sexist as it does not apply to female students. Imagine your school not allowing boys to paint their nails and giving boys a hard time for it, and the whole administration being okay with it. It's homophobic. It's sexist. Welcome to West Texas. That's what Wilkinson said in his tweet that day. On Thursday, Wilkinson was informed by his principal and vice principal that he could choose to take classes remotely until January, go home and remove his nail polish, or keep the nail polish and remain suspended. He said he was choosing to keep all his nail polish. Good for him. Wilkinson told KRBC-TV, "Ever since I came out, I've been having more issues at Clyde than I normally would have. I really wasn't surprised about this thing. Clyde is very traditional." Following his meeting with the principal, Wilkinson launched a petition. This is the good part. I said we're going to end on an up note. Wilkinson launched a petition urging the school to change its policy. And the petition says, I'm a gay male and I'm beyond proud. This is unjust and not okay. Help me show that it is okay to express yourself and that your identity that society wants to normalize is not okay. I am human. I am valid. I should not get in trouble for having my nails done. Sign and share this so people like me don't ever have to deal with this again. And to date, over 60,000 people have signed the petition, which I think is awesome. And we will be right back.
Next to you, the sky is more blue in Malibu. Next to you, in Malibu. Next to you, we watch the sun go down as we're walking. I'd spend the rest of my life just standing.
My family and I finally found the perfect apartment to rent.
My school is right down the block.
Can we go to the park anytime we want?
Yes, sweetie.
Then, after we were turned down, how was I going to explain? The landlord doesn't want families with kids in his building?
So we made a call and found out that's illegal.
If you think you've been discriminated against, Metro Fair Housing may be able to help. For more information, the number is 404-524-0000. This is another public service announcement brought to you by your listener-sponsored and supported community radio, 89.3 FM, WRFG.org.
All right. And we are back. That was Kylie Minogue off of her new album, Miss a Thing. You were listening to Alternative Perspectives on WRFG 89.3 FM, 89.3 Atlanta FM. This is Alternative Perspectives, Atlanta's only queer radio hour. And we are talking about some queer news. I have a few more news stories before we get to our guest, which I'm very excited about. We're going to be talking today with Eric Wright from an organization called Rainbow Railroad that helps LGBTQ individuals who are seeking asylum from their own countries. And we're going to be talking with him in just a little bit. But first, we got a few more bits of news. And let's see. This is this one's kind of funny, always happens. This is Father George Butler, a well-known Catholic priest in New York City, has been charged with, wait for it, sexual assault of a female security guard. That's a little bit unusual. According to reports, Rutler attacked the woman after she filmed him watching a gay adult film. So the incident happened on November the 4th. The National Catholic Reporter reports that Ashley Gonzalez, a 22-year-old security guard at St. Miguel the Archangel Church, I'm sure I said that wrong, Archangel Church, walked in on Rutler, who is 75, watching a video of two men performing oral sex on one another. Gonzalez whipped out her cell phone and began filming the incident. At that point, Gonzalez claims Rutler noticed her in the room and began making sexual overtures to her. It's kind of strange. He's watching a gay porn flick. Woman comes in, catches him. Then he starts trying to act like he wants her, which I guess maybe that's his way of saying, no, it's okay, I'm not gay. I don't know. This is Gonzalez, who told, this is in New York, by the way, in the Bronx. He looked at me with a smile, looked away, and he put his hand inside his pants, and he was playing with himself. He aggressively threw himself on me and grabbed me sexually aggressively, and I was fighting him off of me. Good Lord. Gonzalez managed to escape and alerted her mother and filed a police report about the incident immediately thereafter. Rutler has, of course, stepped aside from his duties at St. Miguel's in the wake of the allegations. He also denies any wrongdoing. Of course, I strongly deny this allegation, which I maintain is incoherent and painful to my reputation and inconsistent with how I've conducted myself in 50 years of ministerial service without any accusation of misbehavior, Rutler said in a statement. The accusations of Rutler viewing gay pornography are of particular note, given his long history of opposing LGBTQ rights. As a host on the faith-based Eternal Word television network, Rutler has criticized Pope Francis for his calls for embracing the queer community. He's also blamed societal woes on abortionists and sodomites and called gender equality a homosexual vision of culture. So, you know, I have to say, in the age that we're living in, I mean, people are kind of innocent until they're proven guilty. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm assuming this happened, right? You know, why would this 22-year-old girl say something happened that didn't? I mean, what's in it for her? I guess 15 minutes of fame. I don't know. Plus, we've got a Catholic priest who's watching gay porn. Nothing shocking about that, right? But yet, I mean, a man is innocent until proven guilty. So I guess the good news is that this is going to be investigated and not hidden under wraps. So that the police, I'm assuming, yes, will be brought in. So that's good to know and really sad that this happened, particularly if it's true. Let's see. What do we have next? This is actually a bit of good news. This week, the Council of States Switzerland's upper parliament house voted in favor of a project to allow gay marriage in Switzerland. 27 members voted for the plan, 15 against, and 7 abstained. The result follows a successful parliamentary vote on the subject and is the culmination of actually a 7-year campaign to achieve full marriage rights for all in Switzerland. One of the key sticking points was whether a constitutional change was required to make that happen or whether just a change of law would be good enough. So this is the deal. Article 14 of Switzerland's constitution states that, quote, the right to marry and to have a family is guaranteed. That's all it says. It doesn't indicate what marriage is, doesn't say that it's between a man or a woman, just says the right to marry and to have a family is guaranteed. So those in favor of just simply doing a legal change versus a constitutional change argued that there was no need to change the constitution because this statement, the right to marry is guaranteed, already accommodates marriages of any kind. And the majority of the Council of States agreed with that earlier in a different vote, 22-4, 20 against and 2 abstentions agreed that, yeah, we don't need to worry about the Constitution. We can just change the law. Okay. So now for some reason in the article here, it says the rules around lesbian couples' access to sperm are yet to be agreed upon. So I'm not sure what that has to do with it, but I don't know. We definitely need to look into it if sperm is involved. All right. In addition, a referendum on the subject has already been announced. Olga Baranova, one of those behind the project to achieve full marriage rights, views the referendum as a conservative attempt to overturn their work. In an interview, she said her team was ready to win the referendum. So it looks like Switzerland is moving towards marriage equality, which I think is obviously a wonderful thing indeed. It's interesting. They decided that they didn't need to change the constitution for it. So that's good. So things are looking good in Switzerland as opposed to Poland. So let's talk about Poland for a moment. And that'll be a good segue to our guest in a few minutes. In a memorandum on the stigmatization of LGBTQ plus people in Poland, published Thursday, this is December 3rd, the Council of Europe Commissioner for Human Rights criticized authorities in Poland for the appalling treatment of queer people in the country. The 16-page report noted that the stigmatization of LGBTQ plus people in Poland is a long-standing problem, but said homophobic statements by leading public figures were creating an atmosphere of hate and intolerance. She said anti-LGBT plus bias in Poland has been identified as a problem by past commissioners as far back as 2007, but the situation was starting to improve up until 2017. In 2017, there was a worrying turn for the worse with anti-LGBT plus sentiment on the rise and discriminatory attitudes towards LGBTQs coming to the top. She's now worried. This is the commissioner, the European Commissioner on Human Rights, is now worried that progress on acceptance of LGBTQ plus people in Poland has been slowed down or reversed. It is difficult to disassociate this phenomena from the promotion of anti-gay LGBTI sentiment in society by public officials. Don't know if you know this. We reported earlier last month, and actually I've been reporting on it for a while. There has been a lot of negative energy towards the LGBTQ population in Poland. Really started when the president ran for re-election in Poland, very conservative guy, and kind of used LGBTQ as kind of a wedge issue. And there are now LGBTQ free zones in, I think, around 50 cities around Poland, where LGBTQ people are specifically not welcome. LGBTQ free zones. So this is happening in Poland. Not good at all. And that brings me to the idea of people trying to get into this country, get into Canada, get into other countries that are a little bit more LGBTQ friendly by seeking asylum. And now we'll listen to a little bit more of Kylie and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm calling about the two-bedroom apartment you advertised. Is it still available?
Sure.
Great.
Unless you're Black or Latino or disabled.
Housing discrimination is rarely this obvious, but it's just as real and just as illegal. So if you hear things like,
I can't assign you a handicapped parking space,
that could be housing discrimination. And the only way to stop it is to report it so we can investigate.
If you think you have been a victim of housing discrimination, Metro Fair Housing Services may be able to help. The number is 404-524-0000. Fair housing is your right. This has been another public service announcement brought to you by your listener-sponsored and supported Community Radio, 89.3 FM, WRFG.org.
All right. Cyndi Lauper, of course. True Colors. And welcome back. You are listening to WRFG Atlanta 89.3 FM. It is December the 8th. It is Tuesday night. And this is Atlanta's only queer radio hour. I am your host, Greg Bossom. And we are talking about, it's time for our show. We've had quite a bit of news tonight, but I wanted to devote a little bit of time on the show to something we've talked about before, and this has to do with asylum seekers who are LGBTQ and are seeking asylum from countries that are providing them with a lot of trouble. And this has actually been happening for years. There's been gay people seeking asylum and coming into the United States, into Canada, into other more friendly countries around the world. But earlier this year, and our guest probably is aware of this, in June, the Trump administration, thank God he's leaving, released regulations for asylum seekers that are going to make it much more difficult for the transgender community and the gay community abroad to be granted asylum in this country. One change is to eliminate gender-based asylum. Now, what that basically means, and I said this at the beginning, but it's worth repeating at the beginning of the show, is that a woman basically who is being persecuted in, say, Afghanistan cannot seek asylum based on her gender. So how does this affect the queer community? Well, it would also potentially affect trans individuals who are currently under physical assault in many countries around the world. Additionally, political opinion. If you're persecuted for political opinion, that is one way that you've been able to get into America and to seek asylum. But according to the Trump administration, political opinion no longer includes LGBTQ advocacy or speech. And so those activists that are attempting to seek asylum because they're being persecuted by the government for speaking out will no longer be able to get it. This got me thinking about what's going on these days in terms of getting asylum, granting asylum to LGBTQ people around the world, in addition to the fact that COVID has probably made it all but impossible. So I ran across an organization which I think is a really neat name. It's called the Rainbow Railroad, and it's actually a Canadian-based organization, began in 2006, whose purpose is to help LGBTQ individuals who are seeking asylum from their own countries. And with us on the show tonight is the communications director by the name of Eric Wright. Eric, thank you so much for joining us. How are you doing this evening?
Hey, Greg, it's a pleasure to be here.
All right. Well, did I get that right? I'm assuming you know somewhat about what's going on with the Trump administration, even though you aren't in Canada.
We're definitely following that.
Yeah, I mean, has that, I'm not sure where we are with that at this point, because it was these changes, I don't know if they've been implemented yet.
So I'm not 100% familiar with the changes that the Trump administration has proposed, but I do know, like you said, it's clear that the Biden administration or the folks surrounding Biden are signaling that transit and gender nonconforming folks are going to have, there's going to be some changes in policies regarding them, whether it's domestically or internationally. So I just note a tweet from Joe Biden on November 20th about the very unfortunate ongoing crisis of violence against trans folks in the United States and globally. And in that he discusses some of the violence that's gone on, and has a message for folks that they deserve safety and dignity. So I think we're seeing, from my point of view up here in Canada, my sense is that there's a pretty stark contrast in terms of what's happening with the incoming Biden administration versus the Trump administration, which has obviously been very very hostile to particularly trans folks.
Yeah, very much so. Very much so. Obama spent years trying to get the trans ban on the military removed, and then Trump immediately put it back into play again without even telling the military chiefs. He just did it via tweet, I think.
Right. That was one of the first, I believe, one of the first policy instances where it was clearly an attack on the trans community. So it's good to see at least a change in rhetoric, and we hope that that's followed up with action.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit, because you are not in this country, you are in Canada. So I was a little curious about, tell me a little bit about what your organization does, just to give the listeners an idea.
Sure. So Rainbow Railroad is an international nonprofit organization. Our mission is to move persecuted LGBTQI people facing violence around the world to safer countries. We work almost in a triaging fashion to assess people's cases around the world and then work to get them to new places where they can hopefully begin their lives over. That's the rough idea of what we do. There's a lot of in between, but that's our overall mission.
Yeah, that sounds like a giant undertaking. So I guess maybe one way to understand it is just from the viewpoint of somebody that's attempting to get out of a country. So the first thing, well, I wanted to ask you too, which countries do you usually hear from? Are there certain countries that are, I guess, the worst offenders?
You know, we hear from people all over the world. There's no one country I could say that is the worst offender, because in many cases, even if some laws are on the books, perhaps they're not being enforced, et cetera. So, you know, historically we've heard a lot from the Caribbean. We've also heard from Middle Eastern countries. And particularly recently we've been seeing, I think this has also been in the news, is that even in some Eastern European countries, there's been a rise of sort of right-wing nationalism, and along with that, some increase in homophobia and transphobia. So we have seen, and I think we're probably not the only organization, lots of news organizations covering this too, but folks in Poland and Hungary and a few other countries in that region increasingly threatened. So no clear answer for you in terms of which are the worst offenders. I think even in our own countries, the United States and Canada, we do have a lot of work to do. And our rights are precarious and tenuous. And as we've seen with the Trump administration, potentially erasable with just one election.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure people aren't surprised at the Middle East. We've heard a lot about Poland. I did a story, reported on a story of it earlier in the show. And Hungary is obviously marching way to the right. Mm-hmm. But I don't think people, I think people might be surprised to hear about the Caribbean. Jamaica is one country that I think is just has a horrible record when it comes to when it comes to LGBTQ abuse. So tell me, so somebody contacts the Rainbow Railroad three, I noticed on the website there's a get help here. So I guess that's how this starts. You have kind of a listing of things to do, and then there's a get help and you can fill out information. So I guess this is where you're getting your pool from. And I mean, how many people do you get asking for help in a given month?
We get, on average, I believe around 2,000 or over 2,000 requests per year at this point for assistance. And I don't work specifically in terms of triaging those cases that come in, but I know that my colleagues on the in the organization are getting those constantly. So every day there are definitely requests coming in from people around the world, which, you know, sitting in Canada, a relatively safer country to be LGBTQI, can be pretty harrowing to understand the global scope of the problem, which is the lack of the distribution of LGBTQI rights globally. There is just such a gap that has opened up as LGBTQ movements have made such such progress in some countries, whereas in other countries, it's there's really a lot of work to do.
Because if I'm in another country and I'm going to try and leave, I'm assuming I may contact you before I even know what country I should get into. Maybe that's part of one of the things that you do to try and help people decide what country they should get into.
Yeah, it's absolutely. We work with folks to get them to safer places. So I have to state outright that some of our work cannot necessarily be discussed in public, just because of the sensitive nature of it for the folks that we assist. Mm-hmm. However, I can just say that we work with people on the ground. They reach out to us. Sometimes we notice them, and then we help them to get to a safer location. Our work is complicated because obviously when you have thousands of people reaching out, you can't assist everyone. And we are deeply aware that our organization works as almost like a to reduce harm in the world. And we also, as an organization, advocate for and hope for a world in which we are actually not needed in a certain way in terms of moving people from one country to another, because it's obviously not an ideal solution for someone to pick up and leave their country. In many cases, people start new lives and go on to live wonderful lives in their new countries, but that's a very jarring process to be moved across the world in some instances, different cultures, different languages. And so that can be a very harrowing experience for folks.
Yeah, I think that most of us that don't have to face leaving a country, you know, you can kind of think, well, gosh, if that's really bad, you know, leave the country, go somewhere else. Well, even if you can get into another country, the idea of picking up your entire life and moving to another country is not something that most people do, or even, you know, and to conceive of everything that has to happen. You may have to learn another language, trying to get a job, trying to get a place to live, dealing with the legal aspects of it. Do you have volunteer attorneys that help you out, or are you basically more of a logistics sort of group where you're, you know, providing them routes?
Yeah, we're pretty focused on the actual movement aspect.
Yep.
I think that's one of the powers of our organization, is that we do have a pretty specific focus. And we connect folks with partner organizations and advocacy organizations once they arrive in countries to assist them in the resettlement process. But, you know, that's something that we're deeply aware that we don't want to spread our resources too thin.
Yeah, well, I think if you're really focused on the movement itself, I think that's something that's I think there's been a need for that, because I do see other organizations that help people immigrate and get asylum, even ones that are focused on LGBTQ. But this is the first organization I've heard of that really gets into the details of how you're going to get from point A to point B safely.
Yeah.
Which actually, it's an interesting, so your name, did you want to talk a little bit about where
that came from?
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Some of your listeners might be familiar with the historical Underground Railroad. Actually, I'm sure many will. I'm talking with, this is Atlanta. So
yeah.
A lot of folks are going to know what this is. So Underground Railroad, 19th century coalition of people working together to move people who were enslaved in the southern United States to free states, as well as to, at the time, British sovereign territory in North America. And so that was obviously a collection of religious folks, of abolitionists, and really people from many different walks of life. And I might be getting a bit of my history wrong here, so I hope I'm characterizing it properly, but that was a network of safe houses and kind of word of mouth and different routes and maps and ways of essentially escaping a brutal and evil system. And we take inspiration from that in a way. And that's what our name stems from, is the Underground Railroad. We fashioned ourselves as the Rainbow Railroad, building on that same spirit. And I think if we even look at the Underground Railroad, we understand that it was a response to try to mitigate what was going on, but it was not the only sufficient response. There were other organizations working to and people fighting for the ultimate. Goal, which was to change the system. So we're also doing that work.
Yeah, you are. And, you know, the Underground Railroad took enslaved Africans not only to free states in America, but also up into Canada. So
right.
I'm not surprised. And I'm kind of curious, because this feels like an international organization, Eric. So
we are, yeah.
But yet you're based in Canada. So how is that just because of the founders, or is there a decision to be in Canada over America?
No. We were founded in Toronto in 2006 by a core group of activists, and we actually do have a presence in the United States. We do have a small office in New York. So we are active in the United States. Many of the people who we help, however, so that's kind of our footprint as an organization, but, you know, we work globally. We move people from country X to country Y. We're always looking for the best route for folks, the best way to resettle them. There's no clear sense of in each case, okay, we're going to move this person to Canada or Germany, et cetera. It's really just assessing each case at a time and deciding what the best route is for people.
So some people, I guess, are contacting you just to get general information, but some people really need to be guided through the process. And I guess what I'd like to ask you, without you going into enough detail to get yourself in trouble here, but what are we talking? Are we talking like, well, let me help you get a visa and let me help you get a plane ticket? You know, or are we talking like, let me help you leave without regards to the law, and, you know, here's a safe house, you know, much like they did in the Underground Railroad? I mean, is some of that what's going on?
Yeah, it's hard for me to answer that.
Right.
I think we're always working to move people out of countries as best we can.
Yeah. I'll leave it at that. Okay. Sorry about that.
That's okay. I mean, the main goal is to you know, there are people who are threatened with extreme violence. I'll give you an example. We recently posted a video of someone who ended up going to Germany, and she was actually attacked in Jamaica for being gay. Someone that she was going to meet up with actually tricked her and attacked her and really assaulted her. And then there was, for folks who aren't familiar with Jamaica, there's not a lot of recourse to the law when you're in that kind of situation as a gay person. So that kind of violence can start cascading and you can start to feel pretty trapped. We helped her get to Germany. So that's just one example. And you can check that example out on our Facebook page, or you can find it on our Instagram as well.
Well, yeah, these days I would think Germany might be a little bit of a better place to come to than the States.
Yeah.
And I actually had this thought, Eric. I wonder if people from this country have contacted you to get out.
Yeah, I undoubtedly so. I couldn't say for sure, but
yeah,
I'm sure that that my colleagues at the organization have received that.
So how many people do you feel like your organization has helped to date, would you say?
Yeah, we've helped around 1,000 people to date.
Wow.
From 2006. And it doesn't necessarily include people who we are, say, in contact with or assisting on the ground just with support and logistics and kind of in our network. That count is really a reflection of people that we are directly involved in assisting them get to a safer country.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, that sounds good. So I would assume you have relationships with some of the other organizations around the globe that,
absolutely,
that are, you know, trying to help these same people.
So, yeah.
That's,
yeah, this is, it's absolutely partner driven work. We have to, we are a global network. So our global network of activists assists us in connecting with people and making sure that we can do this work. So this is not a Rainbow Railroad effort alone. This is a globally distributed network of LGBTQI activists working together.
Well, I've got just a couple more things and then I'll,
sure,
I'll let you run. But
sure,
tell me how COVID has changed things this year.
Yeah. Well, of course, for everyone, COVID-19 has been just a very difficult experience. I think from our point of view, because people move across borders, a lot of times that disrupted or had the potential to disrupt our work. But we were able to continue to support a lot of people in country while many of the border restrictions were on, and some of them ended up lifting and are continuing to lift now. And it's obviously a very shifting situation, but what we've managed to do is really stay true to our strategic plan, which is continue to help people within countries, seek solutions within countries when possible. And then when those solutions don't necessarily work, we're able to move people, or we're able to assist people move across borders. So we managed to be effective, and folks can take a look on our website. We recently published a report on our impact during COVID-19, and all said and done, we ended up helping over 400 people in the period from January through to October in a variety of different ways, including moving folks across borders, but at a slower scale than normal due to just the borders being shut.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, and I wanted to give you an opportunity because I think you were in the middle of a fundraising drive at this point.
Yes.
It's called 60 and 60. So yes, go ahead and tell us a little bit about that.
Thanks. So 60 and 60 is our annual end of year giving opportunity. Rainbow Railroad, so this organization I've been discussing, is entirely funded by community organizations or community members, let's say. So that includes just everyday folks that want to give us a hand in queer communities, allies, foundations, and corporations who assist us in our mission. 1660, the goal of that is simple: raise enough money in 60 days to move an additional 60 people to safety or safer countries. And we've been fundraising since the beginning of November. And we're halfway through the campaign and we're doing quite well. We're aiming to raise $600,000 Canadian. And I believe we're at around 430, the last time I checked, 430,000 that is. So with that money, we are planning to fund the movement of another 60 people to safer countries. And a lot of people ask us, well, how much does it cost to move someone across borders? On average, we find that's around $10,000 when all is said and done in terms of all of the various processes that have to happen from start to end. That's the rough figure. Some will be more, some will be less, but that's what we end up costing it out at.
All right. That sounds good. And where can people go to participate? Just go to your website? Sure.
Yeah, go to our website, rainbowrailroad.org. Mm-hmm. And on that homepage, you'll see there's a link to our hashtag 60 and 60 campaign. And of course, we love people sharing our videos and content on social media. Helps us reach a larger audience.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how it feels like as a globe, we've kind of gone backwards over the last few years. It feels like we were really making strides forward with LGBTQ rights. I never thought in America we could get married. I saw we were give a story on the show earlier where it looks like that Switzerland is moving in that direction now to allow marriage to be legal. But I wonder, and this is just me talking to you, I mean, why do you mm-hmm. suppose we've taken the step backwards? Is it just a backlash? People think we've moved too quickly or whatever? It might just be the state of how people evolve. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
No, I really don't know. I couldn't say specifically. I know my sense is that things are really quite tenuous right now. Like you said, there's been years of progress in some countries. And now we're seeing, in the United States specifically, a bit of a stumble. And I think also, I think there's a growing recognition that LGBTQ rights are not equally distributed in terms of socioeconomic status and race. And so there's that growing awareness, but which has been part of the LGBTQI movement from the get-go. I honestly couldn't 100% tell you or say what is happening other than to say there's a global movement, obviously, towards right-wing authoritarianism, and that typically, historically speaking, has been homophobic, transphobic, misogynist, racist. So that's potentially one explanation why we're seeing LGBTQI rights more up in the air than we have maybe even say 10 years ago when things, maybe progress seemed a little bit more inexorable.
Yeah, it feels like it is part, it's like there's this fear of the other, right? Mm. That seems to have developed across the globe. And that shows itself with ultra nationalism. We don't want these foreigners in our country. Go back to your own country. But it's based in fear of the other, and it feels like minorities of all kinds just get swept up in that same wave,
Yeah. I think that's right. I think that as we've seen in so many historical examples, that minority communities in times of great economic or social stress are often scapegoated for the and problems perceived or real of the larger community. So we see that example in the 1930s in Germany and homophobia. And obviously that's the most terrible example, which leads to the persecution of LGBTQI people, particularly gay men and the Holocaust. But there are many, many other examples in which politicians take advantage of broad-based homophobia to find support for their policies. So I think just broadly speaking, right-wing authoritarianism is always linked to homophobia, transphobia, misogyny, racism, and will, if it continues its rise, we're going to be in it for the long haul here.
Yeah, I think so too. Well, thank you so much. I really do appreciate you coming on, Eric, and sharing with us. I also appreciate the work that you're doing.
Thank you.
And I think it's so important. And if I could, just at the very end, and I like to do this every once in a while, it just tell the listeners a little bit about your own, and of course, we could have a whole show on this, but your own story coming out, and I guess maybe just pick a particular struggle that you feel like that you had early on. And
Sure. Okay, I'll share something. Well, I think for myself, I had it relatively easy, my coming out story. So I'll start by saying that. But I believe that some of the teachings of the Catholic Church had seeped into my family's history, and that made it a little bit more difficult for me. I was never religious, nor was I raised religious, but some of the, let's say not even the Catholic Church, but the homophobia that sometimes is associated or excused upon the basis of religion had made it into my family history. And so that was, for me, the hardest struggle was to try to combat that. And that gives me a lot of empathy for LGBTQI religious folks who are struggling with their religiosity and trying to reconcile that with their queer identity. For me, there was a little bit of the kind of the vestiges of that, and I felt that a bit, but that was my biggest struggle. And then, you know, of course, just I do believe that coming out and queerness is an iterative process. It needs to be continually reaffirmed in community and in work, even potentially. So that's something that's always ongoing.
Yeah. Well, I you know, you're not the first person that I spoke to that I've spoken to over the years that has had the big trouble has sort of been reconciling mm-hmm. who you are with a belief system that you may feel really strongly for.
That's
it.
Right.
Doesn't sound like you were a huge Catholic, but you still,
no.
A lot of that doctrine has kind of seeped into your culture. So
yeah, that's a fair way to say it. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think it gave me a sense of how difficult that would be, because I believe that obviously one can be religious and deeply spiritual and also LGBTQI. But I think for folks who have been set up to think that those two are opposite, it can be just a wrenching process. And I feel very strongly and for those two to go well together and be mutually reinforcing of each other.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Well, that is well said, and we will leave it at that. Thank you so much.
Great.
Eric Wright with Rainbow Railroad, that is helping people across the globe that are in countries where they are being abused, helping them get to countries where they can feel safer. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for your work. And again, to learn more about it, just go to rainbowrailroad.org, right?
That's right. Thanks, Greg.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
And we'll be right back.
All the time I've been building my castle of love.
Greetings, WRFG listener supporters. It's the end of the year, and WRFG wants to be your choice for an end-of-the-year tax-deductible love donation. Take a little time to go to WRFG.org to make your secure contribution. You can also send a check, money order, or even hand-deliver your financial gift to WRFG at 1083 Austin Avenue Northeast, Atlanta, Georgia, 30307. We thank you for thinking of us and for keeping us on the air as your independent source for empowering information and listening pleasure. Hurry! Make your tax-deductible donation while you still can.
And that is going to do it for us on Alternative Perspectives tonight. Thank you so much for listening. Please wear a mask. Don't be an idiot. And I'll see you next week.